I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Lit. Can't Lit.
Talk about books and stuff. Hello. Welcome back. Did you miss us?
They missed us.
Were you sad that we didn't release an episode last month?
Did you cry into your pillow?
We want to see those tears, hear them.
I want a photograph of your tear-stained pillow. I want you to send it to us, at us on Twitter, at CantLit, and I want the hashtag MyCantLitTears.
Yes. Yes.
I'm processing what you just said. Hashtag soggy cotton. Hashtag don't ask about my thread count, you bitch.
I'm not gonna shame you. I don't care what kind of sheets you have.
We don't care. We just want to see your tears. That's all.
And I mean, I want you to be comfortable, and I want you to get some sleep. I hope you're getting some sleep because it's very important.
I'm trying to think of like a Britney Spears song that's appropriate for this moment, and I can't even think because the only ones that I sing are the same ones I sing on the podcast all the time.
What about Give Me More, but about tears?
It's too upbeat.
What are you talking about? I can't even think of any of her other ballads.
Song, but she cry with her lonely heart. She, okay.
Yeah. That, I mean, that, as we all know, is the best Britney song.
She sits on a moon and like throws glitter in the video.
Yeah. 5 years ago at the launch of my second book, friends of the podcast, Sonara Geisler and Amy Ouellette, did a choreographed dance to that song while I pretended to be drunk and stumbling around loudly singing that song. Anyway, Blind Items, great book. You can still purchase it. And that's how you do a book launch.
Yeah.
So don't, you don't have to read from your book. You can just do whatever you want.
Nobody wants you to read from your book. Nobody wants that.
I mean, your publisher probably does.
I mean, read like a page and then just get on with it.
Yeah.
That's my tip, writer's tip of the day.
Well, I mean, I hope our guest has great advice like this.
Nice.
We're just hot tips overall. We're very excited. Returning guest, true delight. She is a poet, a literary darling, a nonfiction superstar, magazine publisher.
Also fiction writer.
Fiction writer. Just a very enjoyable person, Shalene Knight. Her first book was Braided Skin, which was poetry. And then Dear Current Occupant came out. Nonfiction, but a bit of a hybrid, which I'm sure you're tired of talking about.
Just read it.
Yeah, just definitely read it. It's worth your goddamn time. And that book won the City of Vancouver Book Award.
Yeah, it sure is did.
True. Both of her books are amazing. Hi, Shalene. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm sweaty.
Yeah. We're all a little bit moist on the skin.
Sorry. I have a fan, but it makes a lot of noise.
Yeah. I think everyone in this room has pretty thick hair.
Yeah.
You definitely do have the most, but this is like a... We all have dark hair. It's holding in the heat.
It's a soggy hair situation now.
Soggy hair, dude. Yeah.
I thought that cutting my hair short for me would make it cooler, but not true.
Really?
It's still hot.
I think it has to be short.
It gets
short.
Through like it gets it's through
your
the top,
that
right?
Hot. Yeah. So if you cut it short, still
it does nothing.
It does nothing.
Yeah. But we're all here.
Also here.
Yes.
My very recently former student. We did a summer session together. Preeti Dhaliwal. We worked together, University of Guelph. Let me pass my mic. Hi.
Hey.
this is part of our sort of learning practice. She's here to like listen in on the podcast. Emerging writer. Genius person.
Thanks for your interest, honestly. I really appreciate it.
she's chuckling. I do like that chuckle.
Great chuckle. You definitely are going to hear it in the background. A wee bit. A little bit.
It really is a chuckle, though. Yeah, I like it. Okay.
Yeah. See, Shalene chuckling also.
It's a full body. It's a full body endeavor.
We don't giggle up in here.
Yeah.
We chuckle.
Yeah, and Shalene got to meet Rosie.
Rosie's eating a tendon.
Yeah.
Oh, she's almost done.
She's almost, nah, she's got a good hour left on that one.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's real hungry.
What's happening, Dina?
Well, I just turned 40.
Yay!
And I had many great celebrations, but it's one of those milestone birthdays. Mm-hmm. And I know some people don't like their birthday at all, and they don't like to celebrate, or they might, even with a milestone, they're like, I don't want to address it. I'm a Leo, so I didn't think about any of those things. I was like, I want multiple parties. I want people to celebrate me. But now I'm in the post-birthday sort of, anytime I do something that's really high energy or really exciting or lovely, I love my high highs, but I always go really low right after. And I wish I knew how to better manage that, but I'm so bad at it.
You don't have to manage it if you don't
want to
manage it.
I want to because I hate feeling terrible.
Just keep doing things.
Yeah,
just keep doing
I know. I made a big mistake and I didn't really plan anything afterwards. And I have not socialized in about 2 weeks.
Okay, that is not great for me.
So I just made some errors in judgment. But this summer has been lovely. I've done a ton of swimming. We talked about swimming before we started recording and... I've been in lakes, I've been in oceans, I've been in pools. And earlier this summer, I was a guest speaker at my old high school. Like,
that's awesome.
So yeah. I've done all these strange things in the last couple months since I've talked to you. And yeah, it's been good. And yet I still have this weird feeling, this dread-like feeling. I mean, I'm sure we all do. Let's get real.
I mean, you know? The world is falling apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But
I mean,
here we are.
Yeah.
But I have you lovely people. I got Jen by my side. I got Rosie in my sidecar.
Wearing a pair of goggles and a scarf.
Yeah, I feel like Rosie would look great with like a little scarf.
She'd be great.
Like Snoopy.
Yeah.
She looks like Snoopy. You should have done a tribute to Peter Fonda and just dressed her up like
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider style. And got her on a little hog. She'd be so cute.
She'd be so cute. Yeah. She would hate it.
Yeah. Oh, she definitely
would.
That
time I dressed her up as Georgie from It. She didn't forgive me for a
long
time.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah. She was really upset with me.
Yeah. She didn't care.
We took her out. It was for Halloween. We took her out for trick or treating. She was barking at everybody because she was so miserable.
Oh my God.
She's like, I fucking hate this. I'm going to bark at you because I fucking hate this.
Just dressed her up as the balloon.
I had the balloon tied to her. I think that was the issue more than the raincoat.
Oh, she didn't like so it was the balloon.
Yeah, because the balloon kept flapping behind her. And it was just a lot. She was like literally barking at everybody who even made eye contact with her. Because she's like, I'm going to make everybody feel as fucking miserable as I feel right now. I don't blame her. It was real cute, but she didn't like it.
Oh my God. Anyway, basically it's summer. I've been in the sun as often as possible because I just love sun damage. And I can't wait to get more. So anyway, that's who I am.
Mazel tov.
And everybody knows it. Jen, what's happening with you?
You know, I've spent a lot of time with my family this summer, which has been a mixed... Actually, it's not been great.
You're like, why would I lie?
My family doesn't listen to the podcast. Do they? True. Do they? I don't know. My very sweet nephew's girlfriend, who I like a lot, she's lovely, posted on the Instagram picture of my mom like blowing out her 80th birthday candles, and she's like, this is my boyfriend's papa and she's so brave and sweet and she's taught me so much. And I'm like, brave and sweet? My mom? Mrs. Lee? Anyway, I sent the link to my other sister. I'm like, hey, this will make you laugh. And she's like, what the fuck? was her text. My mom is many things. She's funny. She's tough as nails. Brave and sweet, though. I mean, yeah, no.
This is someone who doesn't really know her very well.
No, my mom appears elfin and cute. Appears so. If you ever see her at my book launches, she sits there in the corner beside like the book table and she's like, and she like counts all the books that are being sold. Everyone's like, your mom is so cute. I'm like,
just counting them.
Is she, though? Is she? No, not at all. That's what's been happening. I have told this story many times to probably everybody here. We had a family reunion in Whistler. One day she goes up to my son who is 9 and gives him like a red lucky envelope and with like money in it. And she gives it to him. She's like, you have to count it. And so Oscar's like, okay. So he counts it. It's $800. And she's like, that's for your high school graduation because I don't know how much longer I have on this earth. And I'm like, he's nine. Thanks, Mom, I guess.
And then this important lesson in mortality.
Yeah. And then Oscar says, am I supposed to be happy or sad?
I like both.
Hard to say.
Hard to say.
Also tried to plan her funeral over tea. Because she found out about 2-for-1 deal with her friends. She wanted to take advantage of such a thing.
2-for-1 funeral?
Yeah, if you plan your funeral, if you book your funeral ahead of time with the right funeral, with the funeral home, and you make a commitment, it's like a 2-for-1 deal. Like before you die, if you make the commitment before you die.
Your mom is a real baller. She's
sweet though? No.
She knows what she wants.
Oh yeah, she's great. She's great. Hi, Mom.
Oh my God! Imagine if she listened to this one episode.
The only episode she listened to.
Yeah, she's like, I do wonder what Jennifer does with her time. Listens to the one episode. She's like, evil girl.
My youngest demon child.
I knew I should not have birthed her out of my middle-aged loins.
Well, Shalene, what's happening?
Well, I don't know how to top that. Aside from sweating, I guess.
Keep your sweating.
I'm working on my novel. It's almost done.
Really?
So that's what's happening.
And that's
I'm so excited about it because I've been plugging away at this thing for years. You know that, Jen.
I do know that.
Diving into Junie, my novel. And the ending keeps changing, and then I delete it, and then I restart it, but it is like a chapter away from being done.
I am so happy to hear that.
And I did like a 2-week residency in Banff.
Yes.
And I locked myself in that room, and I didn't talk to anybody. I'm like, enjoy your workshops, enjoy your dinners, enjoy your whatever. I didn't even talk to Daniel. I talked to Daniel a little bit. He was there.
He did.
He was a mentor at Banff. And he's like, I can't wait to get home and do my laundry. I'm like, I know, me too. But I pretty much powered out that whole novel like while I was there. So I have one chapter left. And that's what's happening with me, and that's my razor sharp focus, aside from teaching workshops and doing those kinds of things. Yeah, but yeah. The novel is almost done.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Me too.
I'm very so invested in Junie. I'm so invested in it. Oh God.
I'm so nervous about it.
That's okay.
Who knows how to write fiction? I don't.
Do you
know how to write fiction?
I mean, knows. I think Nobody people knows. Think I know.
Yeah.
But do I?
But isn't that the whole thing where, like, you know,
no
you
answers.
Just it also just changes with every project, with every move that you make, right? Yeah.
Poetry I get, nonfiction I
but
get.
But I feel like poetry is the
novel
same
is
in that you it changes as you move through it, and it's just
you can do whatever you
fiction,
want.
Fiction you have to kind of, I don't know, pay a different type of attention.
It's a different kind of like a novel. I can't say for short stories because I don't really write them, but I will, like, for a novel, I will say that the immersive experience is very complete. Like, you're very much everything. You have to think about every last detail, and that's why it takes so many drafts, right?
Yeah.
Because you're always thinking, did I do enough with the setting? Did I do enough with the theme? Did I do enough with the dialogue? Blah, 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 blah. And almost, you can almost never do enough, but then there are times when you can, but there is a moment where if you keep going, it's just going to get worse. Mm-hmm. That's how you know when to stop. But it's consuming. I actually can't write anything else if I'm writing a novel. I literally can't.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Focus on that one thing.
Yeah, that's why I haven't written a novel in forever.
Can I ask a question about...
Sure.
So you're almost done. So like, how are these drafts... How are you saving them? How are you dealing with them as you move through? You said that you keep deleting the ending. So
I keep deleting it.
How many?
You
how
save many, the deleted ending, don't you?
I hope so. I hope Scrivener is my friend.
Okay, you're
and
using
that it's
Scrivener.
All in there.
Yeah. So you're using Scrivener. So you're like going through and saving all these iterations.
So it saves all the revisions and all the versions. Like when I open it, it'll say August 4th, last revision. Mm-hmm. So when I delete it, it's like my own dramatic attempt to say, oh, I can't stand this. But I know it's tucked away in the
it's
cloud.
It's still
somewhere.
There. Okay.
So
that was going to be my question. Yeah, like
that
how
makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't stand this delete.
That makes you feel better.
Good
too.
To see that blank page again. You can start over, knowing it's tucked underneath, and you can always go back to it.
Right, you can revert to that.
You can revert.
Draft. Yeah, that's good.
I'm not setting it on fire or anything.
It's just like mentally, you are.
I mean, you could if you wanted to, and I'm not here to like piss on anyone's process, but
set it on fire.
Hashtag piss on no one's process.
Right, Rosie?
I can't wait to revisit all these hashtags.
I mean, yes.
But mostly about your tears.
Always about your tears. Can't lit tears. Hashtag can't lit tears.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really glad to hear that Junie is progressing, because that was one of my questions. Like, so if you can give anything away about Junie, what would you want in this way that, like, our listeners are going to hear this well before this is eventually published? Like, what info do you want to convey to people about what Junie is?
Well, the one aspect of the novel that I'm really excited about is the picture that I'm painting of Hogan's Alley.
Yes.
So awesome. I am, you know, looking to Wade Compton, saying, thank you for introducing me to the history of this neighborhood. But also what's really cool is now we're seeing it come to life.
Yeah.
So it's not just this historic place. Now it's the now place. So that's what I'm really excited about. And I want folks to really pay attention to the setting and the happenings and seeing the city come to life. Because to me, that's really why I started writing this particular novel. So placing Junie in the center of this town and saying, okay, now you've got to survive. You've got to do your thing. 1930s, 1940s, dealing with racism, dealing with sexism, dealing with, you know, poverty and your city deteriorating, all of that happening at once. So I'm just hoping I captured it accurately. Even though it's a novel, I feel like I want to make sure I paint this really, really accurate, beautiful picture. So here's hoping.
I think that there aren't, not every novel is like setting foremost.
Yeah.
I think Junie is one of those novels though.
Oh yeah.
That was always my feeling with it.
Right. Yeah, it's changed so much since you've been helping me with it. Oh, I don't know what I did. But I think it's okay. Like, David Chiriandi has also been really helpful in helping me shape things and asking me questions that seem sort of, you know, straightforward. But he's like, well, why did you do this? Or why did you kill this character? Or how come you didn't write about more about the racism at this time? And I'm like, ooh, I don't know.
Those are good questions.
Yeah. But it's just like, maybe I glossed over it because I was afraid. And so I really enjoyed working with David, because he's like, here's what you need to do with this book, and then just go ahead and do it. So
I love,
thanks, David.
Do I need to stop dragging him on the podcast?
I mean, you have to have a healthy balance.
I think he and I need to
You've
have
had a long enough relationship.
We need to have a counseling session that you have together.
Everyone loves David.
I love hearing this as well. Like, first, that you're working with like some of the foremost writers in the city. You got Jen helping you early on. You got Wade. You've got David. Like, just
pressure, and I have
the fucking cream of the crop, the best people. So that kind of, the novel feels already a part of the community just because of that. But it's also supported. Just what you were saying about what the ways that David helped you. Because I personally, those are the types of notes that I want. I love questions, and I love people kind of giving me their impression of the work instead of giving me prescriptive notes.
Exactly.
And how, so that's working for you.
Yeah. The questions, I think, are everything. So just, you know, why are you doing this? And making me think about my process and think about why I'm putting what I'm putting on the page, which is really, you know, it seems like it's a basic thing, but I think when you're writing a novel, your mind is all over the place. So you're not zeroing in on those questions. So I'm happy to be asked those things. And I think that's how I mentor as well. When I'm looking at someone's writing, I'm like, question, 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 because you're not thinking about that when you're writing it. So you need someone else to kind of open your brain in that
way. I think
way.
those questions are very important, because it's not a prescriptive way of mentoring somebody either. It's just, hey, have you thought of this? It's not meant to say you have to or don't have to. It's, we want you to think of, and this is the thing about a novel I find personally, is that you have to think about every last possibility. Whether you use it or not, it doesn't even almost matter, but the conscious being present when you're answering those questions is really, really important. And David's good like that. He's smart like that. Fine. Yeah. I'm not dragging him right now. I just said something nice.
He's not being dragged.
I agree, though. I feel the same way. Like, when I mentor people, when I read their work, when I'm giving someone notes, I'm thinking about what my impression is and presenting that to the writer as a way of saying, this is what I got out of this. I could be wrong, but if it's incorrect, this is giving you, in addition to questions, information about how you might want to proceed or not. Like, if my notes aren't getting to the heart of what you wanted to do, like, how do you miss the mark? And I also think then having a conversation is great.
I mean, this is why sometimes a traditional workshop isn't the best. Like, right. I think workshops can function with a conversational tone and be just as useful.
Oh, yes.
As, you know, the fucking Iowa model where you sit there like a stone statue and do literally nothing and it's terrifying.
I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah. So anyway, that's cool. It looked like you had a question, Jen, so I'm looking at you.
Oh, you're looking at me. I was actually going to ask you about hybridity, which I know. Ooh. Oh, but not about Dear Current Occupants specifically, but the general idea of hybridity. And I am seeing, I'm personally seeing so much of different forms gluing together in different ways from different authors. And my question for you is, do you think that's a particular sort of process of writing hybridity or multiple forms that, you know, people of color, writers of color specifically are more drawn to?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm asking you.
I have no idea, but I think for me, when I'm writing something, I have to ask myself, what house does this need or what shape or structure does it need to sit in? Mm-hmm. And that's when I decide, okay, if this is going to be a traditional novel, it's going to be chronological. Okay, let it do its thing. But if I feel like I'm getting stuck, then that's telling me the structure is an issue and I need to just write in pieces and figure out how I'm going to stitch them all together later.
Yes.
So usually it's on a story per story basis. So I know if I'm writing memoir, if I'm writing an essay even, sometimes I want to put in weird stuff. Like I want to put pictures in there or like arrows or like random things.
That's not weird. It's perfectly awesome.
And but then I think, okay, well, who in the heck wants to read an essay with all the stuff in it? Who wants to look at all these visuals when they're looking for a traditional essay? But I have to push that aside and just sort of, you know, allow my story to come out on the page in the way that I have it in my head. Once I do that, then I can go ahead and rejig. But if I put it in the wrong container or the wrong house, I usually just have to start over. Like, it's not working.
So do you think that when you're writing, it's not really about thinking about the forms so much, but putting things together, as you say, in the right house?
Exactly.
Is that thematically or maybe the voice is maybe something that is stitching all those things together.
Yeah. I think it's voice, it's theme, it's, I guess, how each piece flows into the next. So I look for these threads and I find if they're not connecting, then I have to rearrange. So just like you would with a chronological story, you're looking for threads, but when I'm building something that's hybrid, I need to really see the thread. So it needs to be something that pops or jumps out at me. And so that's how I construct. And I know a lot of other writers who do it in the same way, where they have these visuals and they'll write to that visual, but now the visual needs to make its way into the actual house, into the container. Mm-hmm. Seems like it's a strange process, but I feel like people are finally opening their eyes to that, mm-hmm. to the hybridity, because before it's just like, what's that? Nobody wants to read that. Nobody wants to see that. How do we sell this?
Yes. How do we market this?
We don't know where to put this, what shelf this belongs on in the library, like things like that. So it's kind of like this deterrent to not write in that way. So you got to push that away and say, listen, my story needs to be in this way. You either read it or you don't, but I'm not going to sacrifice the structure or the shape for marketability. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You either have someone on your side that's willing to push for it or not.
And I really think that type of thinking about a piece of writing comes from a poetic background, because when you're writing poetry, it has that, but it doesn't, like, that type of process, that type of thinking about creation doesn't necessarily have to lead to a poem.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel like it's coming from that mode of creation.
That's kind of what it is.
Because you're making those connections, whether it's related to image, whether it's related to tone, whether it's related to theme, right?
That's what it is. I think if you can't figure out poetry, at least the basics of messing around with the language and looking for pieces, then I think it'll show a little bit if you're writing in fiction or creative nonfiction, because I don't know, when I read fiction and that writer started out as a poet and I know they write poetry, there's just something different about the way they use language and the way the stories come together. If you have some poetry in you, it will show, and it's a beautiful thing. But I always start a poem with like a phrase or an image or something, pull from that, whether or not it becomes an actual poem, who the heck knows, but I create something from a tiny little morsel.
Yeah. It has that grounding, right?
Yeah.
And whether that
like it's the seed, right?
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to be about that the whole time. It could change, but it's the driving force mm-hmm. that you kind of, it gets you going.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's what it's all about.
It's what it's all about. I mean, this is why I'm so glad Jen's writing poetry now.
Yeah.
No one wants my poems.
Okay. We want Everybody them. Does and is going to buy them when they come out in spring 2020?
Fall 2020. Yeah.
I got too excited.
We don't need to plug my book right now. I don't want to talk about it. I have a meeting tomorrow about my book and it scares me. It's fine.
Well, you should definitely just send me the whole book so I can look at it.
Can you rewrite it for me?
No.
what?
What were you going to say?
I was going to ask Shalene about Learn Writing Essentials.
Oh my gosh, me LWE. Too.
I forgot about that. No, I'm just kidding.
You literally never forget.
I never forget because that's all I do. Yeah. Learn Writing Essentials. What is this thing? It's a combination of things. Really, I just felt like I wanted to see more women of color teaching writing, but teaching writing in a way that's not necessarily the same as the academic world, which I think, you know, doing your MFA thing and all of that's great. But what about after? Or what about maybe before you do that? Is there another way to sort of work with another writer, get into that community a little bit, and do some different techniques and look at writing a little bit differently, you know, and not always just grades, 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 and pass and do this and do that. So Learn Writing Essentials is a whole bunch of things. It's workshops, self-paced courses that I design. So, mm-hmm. you know, you go in at your own pace, do your thing, and at the end you can meet with me and chat about whatever the hell you want. You know, it could be publishing. It could be my experience at festivals. It can be, you know, how do you send this off to a literary magazine, or how do you work with editors, all of that. So it's a whole bunch of things. And yeah, so I've been going hard at that for like a year, and I've been able to sustain myself.
That's,
you know, awesome. Financially.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which that's is weird. Really amazing.
But I mean, I'll work like 12 hours, but I'll take like, you know, a couple hour breaks in between. So it's not really 12 hour work days, but that's kind of enabling me to find the gaps in the industry too. So talking to students and other writers who are like craving author care. So like, how do I do this panel? I'm so nervous about it. And I've heard these horror stories on Twitter about people who are asked really inappropriate questions. And now I don't want to go into this industry. And I'm like, okay, everyone, let's have a big group hug and talk about it. Cause it's happened to me too.
Sure.
You know? And so it's just so terrifying, but, I want to shed some positivity and say, you know what, things are changing. It's changing very slowly, but I feel like doing this work is helping. A little bit.
Yeah, so, very much so.
I think it is. And I mean, I just love that you offer this, and it's so many different ways for people to learn from you and different types of things for people to learn. You have so much knowledge. You do. I mean, I learn from you. I'm sure everyone in our community here, especially,
I just share my experience and say, here's what I think I know.
Exactly. Well, and I feel like Jen and I have a similar sort of attitude about how to present information, where it's like, again, we talked about not being prescriptive in terms of, you know, notes and critique or whatever, but it's the same with everything. Like, you know, you have to present it in a way that people are able to kind of absorb it on the level that they can, that interests them, that is useful to them. And so what has the response been so far? I'd love to hear sort of what it's been like.
The response has been awesome. Like, so I do this advanced memoir workshop. I do that once a year, and I do an advanced poetry workshop, and I shape them the way the writer's studio at SFU is shaped, but super, super tiny. Like, we might have five students. We meet every 2 weeks. You know, I have some info for my students that is based on things I've learned from Jen. So I'll have a Jen corner where I'm like, here's what I learned from Jen Suk Fung Lee in the writer's studio. Here's what I learned from Wade. And so it's also like paying respects to how I came to have this knowledge and how I came to absorb a lot of this, because it didn't just come out of thin air. This is me like being in the corner quiet, like a little quiet sponge, absorbing things and then squeezing it out all over everybody. So that's kind of how I look at it. And I know a lot of people learn differently. So not everyone is you know, classroom ready, sitting in a classroom and looking at everyone. So I'm like, okay, well, we can do this with a curtain where you don't have to turn your camera on. You don't have to see everybody, but we can hear you and we can see your words. So just trying to come up with different ways to bring writers into the room and shape that room for them so everyone's comfortable. So that's a big part.
I love that.
Yeah. I feel so safe and fuzzy right now.
I do too. Mm. Well, and just, I don't know.
That'd be fuzzy.
All the stuff you've been talking, it made me think about, I just read that Jenny Odell's book, How to Do Nothing.
Yes.
Ooh, I want to read that.
It's great. And it really isn't about doing nothing. It's about like kind of self, like redirecting your focus. And it's not about just completely going offline. It's about like, how do we actually engage? Anyway, it's really lovely. And a lot, she's extremely intelligent and intellectual. And a lot of this stuff comes from her background, which some of it is in like tech-ish, but a lot of it, she's a visual artist and does a lot of art stuff. So a lot of the examples of things come from the art world.
Very cool.
I went on to Goodreads, as I do, because this is currently how I'm chronicling like what I read for the year.
Good for you.
And I entered this. I read this book, date finished, gave it 5 stars. I've only given one book 1 star, and everyone on the podcast will know it was Elena Ferrantes. My brilliant friend, 1 star.
I am a bitch.
You know what? I can hate other Italian people. It's totally allowed. So anyway, I was like, oh, there's so a bunch of weird 1 star reviews, and I have no self-control. So I had to read them. And so many of them talked about, and this is, I feel like, tying into two things we kind of just talked about, but like the structure of the book, where, or the intention that people felt the book was going to give them. So the book is not prescriptive. The book is giving you examples. The book is talking about her own experience. She talks a lot about bird watching and how watching birds and listening to their language actually gave her ideas about like deep listening and the communication that birds have their own language. It's, you know, other people have their own language. Like there's all these things that we experience. And she even had an example of like her own mother who's Filipina speaking what she thought was Tagalog, but it wasn't. It was a different dialect. And she's like, I didn't even fucking know. Like, I'm just like, so the reviews were so bizarre. They were like, I thought this was going to be a self-help book that would give me a step-by-step guide to improving my life and how to do nothing. And I was like, this is stress. I mean, this is
why we don't read Goodreads reviews.
This is why I always write. This is, I mean, this is why my first book literally was writing self-help step-by-step instructions and making fun of them, because I was like, I don't understand what's wrong with everybody.
We can't. I've said this, told this story on the podcast before. They're terrible. Yeah. It's terrible. My Goodreads review is Jen Suk Fong Lee is no James Patterson. Yeah. Like that's like, come on now.
The thing is, most of the 5-star reviews were people who totally got it.
Yeah, very thoughtful.
They were people who
completely
understood, who wanted to be on board, who were also letting what her words said not tell them what to do, but kind of give them ideas. And that, to me, is what you want. Yeah. Whether you're giving criticism, whether it's through your own work that people are absorbing and experiencing, like you want to give people ideas.
Yeah, it's like the David Chiriandi thing.
It's like
he asks questions so that you think. Yeah. Yeah. About things. Yeah. He's not saying, here's what you got to do, Shalene. He's saying, think about something. Here's some ideas.
It's the difference between making space for people to tell their own stories as opposed to only making space for the stories that you think are worth
or valuable. As a reader or a consumer or as a greedy person who just wants things to be easy for you, you know, to like have that idea of what things are supposed to be and how they're supposed to be. And so the way you're kind of running this is very generous.
Ooh, thank you.
Which I really love. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Support Learn Writing Essentials. Yeah. Take a class.
Take a workshop.
Friends of podcast.
So spanning off from Learn Writing Essentials, you also have Breathing Creative Space.
Breathing Space Creative.
Or Breathing Space Creative. Sorry.
Same thing.
I just transposed my notes. Sorry. Breathing Space Creative.
Yeah.
So like the idea of breathing space is great already.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us how that functions.
Well, it came to me in the shower.
So best ideas come in the shower. See,
exactly. And I just wrote an essay about this too. That we'll talk about that later. But I'm, you know, conditioning and it takes a while. It's like a 30-minute thing. And I'm just reflecting on this event that I did. And just kind of, and I'm a really slow processor. So it didn't hit me until later that the question that was asked to me was really, you know, inappropriate. And so when anytime I'm on a panel, I'm like, okay, let's just get through this, you know, go bing, bang, boom. But I'm in the shower and I start feeling kind of weird. And I'm thinking, you know what? That event that I did, I don't feel very good about it. And so I started thinking, what was it that was bugging me? Was it the fact that this person asked a really inappropriate question, or was it that I didn't respond the way I think I should have responded? And that's what it was. So that I wasn't prepared to give the answer, you know, or to shut that person down. Like, I feel like you're a festival organizer, you're an event organizer, you tell people to shut these questions down. Why didn't I in that moment do that? And so that's what was bugging me. And so I started thinking about author care. And it just comes to me. I'm like, why can't I create something or a service that's focused purely on this idea of care and supporting other writers and see what happens? So Breathing Space Creative sort of formed from conditioning my hair.
I mean, conditioning water, is very important.
You know, soaking, mm-hmm. all of that.
Yeah. Absorption.
Thinking. Space. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do people get with this service?
They get all kinds of things.
Yeah. Give us some examples.
So I'm going to be pitching publishers and festival organizers and publishing affiliates. So they will get author care packages where they can select authors to work with Breathing Space.
I already want this.
And just, you know. And so also programming audits.
I want this for real Vancouver. I feel like this is what we need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really cool thing. And it's just basically an added level of support. So it's not like, oh, we take over communication.
No.
It's just kind of, we come in, here's all the things that we can work with your authors on so you don't have to, and you can just do your own, you know, production stuff, publishers, and we'll come in and do, you know, even something as simple as tracked changes. You know, some new authors have no idea how to deal. They get their edits back and they're like, what do I do? So Breathing Space Creative can do a track changes tutorial or have like a video or something. We can do mock panels where we, you know, we're going to throw some crazy questions at you. Here's some examples of how to handle that.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, a gentle nudge into the industry. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it.
I wish
I had that when Whatever Gets You Through came out, our anthology on essays on sexual assault, because we had such a hard time, not with the authors. That's never the problem really for me. It was the breakdown in communication between media, publisher, author.
Right.
And how are we supposed to care for the authors who are being completely very vulnerable in that situation?
Exactly.
And I found, for me as an editor with Stacey May, we were caught having to do that, but that was not what we're trained in, what we were
exactly.
expecting. And it's not, and we were happy to do it, but it was a really challenging. Now I know. And it's coming.
We're using it.
September 4th.
September 4th.
Breathing Space Creators.
Look forward to it. Yeah. Get excited. Get on board.
I have help. People are so supportive.
Yeah.
So ZG Communications is helping me.
They're the best.
Shout out to Zoe Grahams and everybody there.
Friends so of the supportive. Podcast. So supportive.
Everyone there is wonderful. Yeah. They're amazing. I'm so glad we have them also, because they could have gone way bigger and done completely different types of marketing, and that they really want to focus on the arts, and especially the literary arts is... just warms my heart
thing.
So much. Yeah. Yes. It makes me really, really happy.
Yeah, me too.
It makes me happy also that you're doing this and that you're sharing this, the hardest fucking parts of being a writer.
Mm-hmm. The hardest parts.
Yeah.
Truly. And talks like, about it.
Yeah. And opening yourself up to people who are going to be more vulnerable.
Exactly.
In those environments.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think it feels to me like it's getting worse. Like, I'm on Twitter, like, I hope everyone's okay. Scroll.
Is it worse though? That's the question I was actually
Or maybe it's just
ask
out
you.
There more.
Is it? Yeah, I
think
know.
It's a social more comfortable media thing. Talking about it more.
Yeah, that might be what
maybe,
it is.
I could be wrong.
Okay, just like, I feel like the microaggressions, or even not so microaggressions, were worse 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think people are talking about it more. So I'm not sure, but I think the need for the need that we feel to support people is more intense, and that's not a bad thing. Maybe
that part's not like the people that are being supportive. I think are being more supportive. Mm-hmm. They're reaching out more. All of that stuff. I mean, I think what you're talking about and what you're doing, like, yeah, I guess there's a writer's union, whatever. But this is the type of thing that if we actually had like a functional union, like
I was, you know, on the last committee.
You know what I mean, though? Like you do in a workplace. This is the type of thing that people would get training in.
Exactly.
And not just the writers themselves, but organizers. Like that's the thing I feel like maybe would be the next step for everybody. Yeah. Like
that's what it's all about.
Organizers getting this type of, I know, right? Like getting this type of information and being like, also, what if there were fucking standards? And like, if you didn't live up to them, you didn't get to participate.
Exactly.
Like that kind of shit feels right to me.
I think so. And it's got to come from all different angles.
It does.
So it's not just publishers or event organizers. Yes. You got to look at the creative writing programs. Yep. You can do a PowerPoint presentation on author care. Here's what to expect and here's how we're going to help you not feel these things, right? So all these different angles, and it just kind of filters down. So really then there's no excuse. So if publishers know about this, they're aware of author care. Author care is not a fancy hotel room and a tote bag. Author care is
100%
author care is having someone's back. And if an author emails you saying, I'm terrified of this event that's taking place tomorrow, I don't want to do it. As a publisher or an event organizer, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, do
or
you
if
just
they're
say,
having a bad media experience, like any of that stuff.
Social media, we have that for Breathing Space Creative, like how to navigate, how to engage, how not to engage, when to engage.
Even this, when we have people on the podcast, we, I feel, try to do our best to make it
I think we do.
A comfortable space.
Yeah,
but that doesn't,
it's very comfortable.
Yeah, but that
for
doesn't
me.
Mean that everyone is going to feel comfortable.
That's
so
right.
like finding a way for us to engage with people on the level that they, and again, of course, you know, I have failed. It's what happens.
Failed.
We all have failed.
We all must
But it's
mistakes.
About sort of trying to find that space.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And always learning more.
Exactly.
Like you don't just stop. And that's why. Okay. Also, I love learn. Because learn was your hashtag.
Hashtag learn.
Well,
was your cooking hashtag.
Yes,
when
I
cook.
I'm not
going to
describe my recipes. I'm going to make something. I'm going to put it out there and just hashtag learn.
Like,
if you have a question, let's talk about it.
I could not get enough of it when it was your cooking hashtag.
That chicken
and now
looks
so
delicious. Please, can I eat some?
What's in it? How did you make it? I don't know. Hashtag learn.
Like the idea
just whip it up.
Coming from the cooking, your cooking background.
That's how it
started. It then becomes exactly like, so the hashtag learns. Yeah. It has this meaning that's important for you.
Yeah.
It's about nourishment and like taking care
pretty much.
And all this other shit.
Feeding yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I've had to figure some of that stuff out myself. So I'm kind of saying, well, you know, the rest of you got to just hashtag learn sometimes.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Do you think it's getting systemically better? Systemically, as opposed to, I mean, no, not as opposed to, but I'm gonna leave the opposed to alone. But is it systemically getting better? That's my question. And I think it's a tough one. I think everyone has a different answer, though.
I think it's getting better, but it's happening too slowly.
It's slow, isn't it? Yeah.
Like I feel like I see some of the small changes because I'm so in to the industry. Like I'm in the core of things. And so I see it from an editor's perspective. I see it from a magazine perspective. I see it from a writer's perspective, a teacher's perspective, a whatever perspective. So as just, you know, a new writer entering into this, I wonder what that looks like to them. Like, do they see the small changes? Probably not. But when you're in the midst of something terrible, that's what you see and that's what you feel. So if you're in that moment and something terrible went down, that's what your brain wraps around. Oh, this, you know, this industry is going to hell, kind of a thing. And so that kind of makes me sad, only because, you know, I've chosen this and I've given up so much to do this work. I can't just throw it out the window. So I'm like, how can I make things a little bit better?
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit. Then I'll do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
We can't give up. And I know that,
I don't want to work at Starbucks.
I'm not ready. I mean, I still have several day jobs, so whatever. I gotta do what I gotta do. You know, I'm not ready either to necessarily give up on trying to make things less worse for people right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's slow and it's awful. And that doesn't mean you don't have shitty days where you're like, fuck this fucking shit. Well, this is why I love. So on your website.
Can't do this. Fuck this fucking
hashtag
shit.
Hashtag. Fuck this fucking shit. Yeah.
Get on board with all our hashtags.
Write it down.
On your website, you also have this amazing page that is the Friends in the Community
page. Oh, yeah, my friends.
And it's so wonderful. And I definitely think we need more of this.
We need
because
more.
Again, I don't necessarily think amplifying the good negates the bad. It doesn't. It doesn't mean we don't have to keep, you know, finding ways to change things and like fuck shit up.
But let's fuck shit up.
Highlighting, like, you have amazing people on there, like Cecily Bell Blaine and Jillian Christmas, friend of the podcast, former guest.
Hi, Jillian.
And other amazing people. Right. So showcasing the excellence of others.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. And so how did you decide to come to that? Why did you decide to go to that place?
I just feel like everything is so much bigger than me. And a lot of the knowledge that I have absorbed has come from working with these individuals. And so, you know, spending so much time at Massey Books, working with Cicely Bell Blaine, you know, whoever else is on my page, I'm like, can I put you on my friends in the community page? Like, I want to support you the way that you supported me. And then it's like this small uplift.
Yeah.
Just a tiny little, you know.
But isn't it nice?
Who knows who's going to my website? Maybe 5 people, but still.
It's nice to have that
and just to kind of share that and talk about what's worked for them, what hasn't worked, and let's kind of build some tools. Let's do something. So if we're talking about our failures, which I love to do, because there's so many of them, we're learning from that too. Yeah. So not only the successes, like what hasn't worked, let's talk about that a little bit, you know? So friends in the community, why not?
Friends in the community.
I mean, isn't that our whole sort of can't lit?
It's our whole thing. We need some friends.
This is what our community is about.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and yeah, I mean, I feel like we go out into the world, we go to events, we do all this stuff, we participate, we organize events, we do everything. But then when everyone comes together, you're just like, these are our friends in the community that we get to see, that we get to spend time with, we get to hear their work. It's pretty cool.
It's what keeps us going when shit seems terrible.
For sure.
Isn't it nice that you can get together for like a glass of rosé and like say, your book is so great, I'm so excited I read it, and I love everything that you're doing. Isn't that better? Well, then lots of things.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Yes, I agree. And speaking of friends in the community and friends of the podcast, you also on your Instagram have an amazing feature called Chester's Picks. And Chester is your dog. And Chester and Rosie definitely need to meet. Chester is obviously a very important dog in the Pets of Cantlet family.
So fantastic.
Pets of Cantlet loves Chester.
I'm gonna say right now, Rosie loves Chester. They haven't met, but
I can't picture him with his bow tie.
I've seen him.
Oh, his bow tie.
He wears a bow tie
constantly. He first thing in the morning, he puts his collar on, then he puts his bow tie on, and he just goes down the stairs and he's like, "Where are my crunchies?" Like, Chester, relax. He's so great. You guys have to meet him.
I truly can't get enough of him on Instagram, but I need to know, how does Chester make his selections?
Oh, well.
For his books in Chester's Picks.
It's really quite the process.
I want Chester's Picks to get bigger than Heather's Picks.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yes. I want them to go toe-to-toe. Paw to paw.
Pod. That would be great. You know what?
Bow tie to Spanx.
Did I just say that? Hashtag bow tie to Spanx. Hashtag bow tie to Spanx. Blood diamonds.
Jen loves indigo. It's fine.
I love indigo too. Buy my book.
Oh, Chester.
Put a filter on it, Jen.
Okay.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
does he just go by instinct?
Well, I just spread a whole bunch of books out and I'm like, Chester, go. And he's with his little paw. And then I put them in order on my little social media spreadsheet. And I'm like, okay, Chester picked that one. What about now? How about now? And I'm trying to nudge him towards something. He's like, it's going over here. So that's kind of what I do. And it's fun.
He
really does pick the books.
I love him.
But
he's,
I mean,
such a
selection is only what's on my bookshelf.
Right.
So, you know, I might have to buy some more books. But Chester's like, paw on the book. And that's how I know.
Oh, my God. I'm dying.
Bless his heart.
Real thing.
Yeah. Bless his
I should make a video.
Yes. Make a video.
Picking the picks.
Put it into your Instagram stories.
Smart. Yeah. I have to learn how to really integrate. Okay.
We'll teach you after the podcast. Yeah.
Okay, great.
We'll do it with Rosie as an example.
We'll let Rosie have a pick.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Again, speaking about community, you also have some employees. Mm-hmm. You have hired friend of the podcast, Carly Bloom.
Yes.
Awesome. And then also Jessica Kent.
Jessica Kent.
So how did you get to this place where you're just like such a mogul?
Well, really, I think I just admitted that I needed help to keep this thing going. I'm like, if I want this to thrive, I have to be willing to invest in some help. And really, that's what event organizers and publishers should do. Invest in help. It's a
ding,
good thing.
Ding, 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 ding.
And so I asked my friend, Jessica Kent, I'm like, do you want any work or something? And she's like, sure. And so we just basically built it off of that. And she's really great and organized. And she does the Instagram. She does all the proofreading and copy editing and all that stuff. And what's really cool is she's not really into the Canlit community. So she's a neutral.
That's actually really great.
So and so awesome. She's not reading anything like, Shalane, don't write this. This is crap. She just, you know, does her thing. And yeah, so it's really, really great. Carly's awesome. She was a former student, so she took the advanced poetry workshop. I love her poetry and I can't wait for her book.
It's so good.
It's so good. She's really such good. An incredible writer. And yeah, so I posted a call and I said, well, we need an ads person because I don't really know a lot about ads. And so I need help. And Carly applied and I'm like, I know you. I trust you. You communicate the way I communicate. You're in.
Lovely.
Yeah. Easy peasy.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
I love it.
I love it's it great. All too.
Investing in help is really key.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yes.
I can't do it all.
Nobody can.
Nobody can.
This is why Dina and I have each other. Yeah. Although really it's a codependent relationship more than anything.
It's very true.
I have a question about the Writers Trust Rising Star situation. Yeah.
Great question.
Because what a fantastic, what do we call it? An accolade?
I don't even know what it is. This was the first year that they did
accolade.
It.
Yeah, it's the first year.
Just cash money.
Cash money. Beautiful thing. So the Banff self-directed residency was because of the Writers Trust. So that was part of it. So that was part of the package. You get a $5,000 prize.
You were selected.
I was selected by David Cheriandi. So a previous Writers Trust, I guess fiction, I guess different categories, a winner of a Writers Trust prize, an established writer gets to select an emerging up and coming writer to win this thing. That's just so amazing.
So amazing.
So the Banff retreat, I had the $5,000 prize. I got 2 days professional development in Toronto. So
I'm
hanging out at HarperCollins like a fly in the wall. And we had a round table. It was just so amazing where we get to ask questions about publishing and they're very honest. It was so awesome. I said, can I please move in here to this beautiful building? So awesome. Really cool dinners. You know, it was just amazing. But then I started to think, is this what Canlit is like? Is this the real Canlit? But of course not. But it was a really it was a really nice blink into
It's like this interesting world. Brief vacation.
Like, so this is what really happens. Yeah. No, it was just so amazing. Such a great opportunity.
And look, it's going to bring Junie into the world.
Yeah.
Oh, like Junie was already going to come, but now this is just like...
Shalene, you're like a rising star. What is that? What? How do you feel about that?
That makes me nervous.
No, it's
sweaty
great.
Sweaty rising star. Is that...
Well, no, things? We're all sweaty
we're
right now.
We're all sweaty. And thing. Some of us are rising and some of us are collapsing to the floor.
I'm not going to lie. I have a slight sweating problem. I'm always a little gooey.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And it was when I saw that David Cheriandi had chosen you, I'm like, this is so
what a nice
great.
Person.
All the people I like, even though I drag his ass all the time.
the subtitle of this episode will be Dragging Cheriandi.
Yeah, I like it.
Can we just... also a poem title.
It's a good poem title.
He knows I have a lot of love in my heart.
That would be like a cute little chapbook where everyone actually writes loving poems about him, but it's called Dragging Cheriand.
Everyone loves him. You can't actually write a hateful poem about him.
I know. That's why it would be a funny title.
Even Rosie loves
him. Like beautiful poems about how he's a delight. I've talked about this before, but truly the only established writer when I worked at Duthie Books and was unpublished and a student who was like, no, you're a writer. You're writing. And I was like, you're so nice. Just me like shelving books and crying, being like, you're nice to me. That's you're not nice. Treating me like shit or trying to fuck me. And I like you. Anyway, that's book selling.
Well, that's what happens. Hey.
And that's customer service, baby.
Bless his heart. That's all we're saying.
Hello.
Bless his fancy shoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bless his fancy shoes and his beautiful little face. Although my coworker at Dethy said he had the face of a small kitten.
And when he would come in, she would make these gestures with her hands that look like little paws. And I was like,
that's great.
He is so cute that it's hard to deny his kittenish face.
I'm going to text him after we're done recording and be like, we called you a kitten on the podcast.
Please do.
Please listen to the episode, David.
Jen.
Yeah.
Are you ready for your emotion corner?
I hope so.
Ooh.
I mean, I definitely feel ready for it.
Dun, dun, dun. Should I go for the one I actually practiced or the one that just popped into my head 20 minutes ago?
What do you feel right now?
I'll make a late game day decision.
Okay, I love it. I'm going to start the timer. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I've been writing this collection of essays, which is supposedly memoir. Supposedly. But the thing is, I don't like myself that much, which is like a problem because you're writing about yourself. And I was thinking about, there was something I was talking about on Twitter a while ago, earlier this summer, about how do we build care for our readers in the work that we're writing? Not at an event, but in the work that we're writing. And I've been thinking really a lot about it. Not that we're trying to like pander to our readers. That's not what I mean. But how do we build blank space into something that we're writing? How do we build a moment where a reader can, you know, breathe out all that tension that they've been keeping? Because ultimately, when I'm writing memoir, for me, and this is not the same for everybody, but for me, there's a lot of trauma involved. And I don't want to say, here is all my pain, deal with it, eat some cheese. That's not what I want to do. So thinking about it a lot, and it's been like a real learning experience for me to understand that writing about myself also means that I have to write about things external to myself so that the reader doesn't get overloaded. So that's my emotion corner for today.
You can add a little more to that if you need to close it out.
That's okay. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's this thing that people say all the time, art for art's sake, I should write whatever I want. It's always, always almost white men who say that. Yeah. And because
I mean, we saw this Rick Moody thing today.
Oh, fuck that guy. That Rick Moody thing. Okay, now you got it. Got me spiraling out of control. The rage.
I know how to get you. We're on
the fucking photo booth photos with him and his like really young wife. And I was like, Rick Moody, nobody cares about you and your stupid novels about the 70s where like little boys were gross with little girls. I don't want to read this shit. Shut up.
I mean, I do want to continue to watch the film adaptation of The Ice Storm.
Well, it's because it's Christina Ricci.
It's beautiful. Everyone in it's beautiful. I can't deny it.
I love me some Christina Ricci. Isn't Sigourney Weaver in it?
Yes. It's full of amazing people.
I love Sigourney.
But you don't need to read the books. Just like enjoy the film adaptation of The Ice Storm.
Rick Moody. This is how I found redemption with my younger wife with my second marriage. Suck my dick.
The actual description of the book is so funny. I saw it last night before I went to bed and I was like, I have to go to bed now. Like I have to sleep because this is so upsetting that I need
it was so upsetting.
I couldn't process any more things. Like the Amazon is on fire. All this other shit is always a nightmare. And then I was like, nope, I can't with this 53-year-old man or whatever, and his 57-year-old man and his 43-year-old wife, and how he found commitment in his the second year of his, or it's the first year of his second marriage. I was like, all of these words sound terrible together and I want them to stop.
It's like him and George Clooney can have a meeting. It's fine.
At least George Clooney lets his wife be in the forefront.
At least, yeah, actually that's true. His wife, and he knows.
He doesn't let, but like she's in control.
I feel like he knows his wife is much better than he is.
What's fucking going on.
He knows that she's better than he is.
Of course he does.
We all know that. Come on now. Yeah. Rick Moody.
Yeah.
Just, you know what? Like, just suck my dick.
I'm so glad I brought that up.
What I'm sorry. As someone who's been married and divorced, I find that very upsetting.
Well, you're the best.
Shit. Okay. Okay. Rage. A ragement.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Dina, go.
Okay. I'm raging at my body. I'm angry at it. It looks fine, like super fine from the outside, but it's been causing me a lot of pain and that sucks. And it makes me a grumpy little otter with fists for hands. But that makes me think about all the inadequate care that people receive for so many reasons, whether it's because they're fat or disabled or chronically ill or old or not white or not cis, whatever. Other people are also suffering because of their bodies, and we need more resources and more time and more space. And I guess I'm angry that the planet is angry and going to kill us,
but I blame myself for that too. So back to being angry at me and my body and my mind and my soul, if I even have one of those. Rage is directed at all points. Also, I have some rage left over for platform flip-flops.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hard no for me. Thank you. I'm going to pass on those. I want flatter flip-flops, please.
Yeah.
Flat flip-flops forever.
I can't believe that was a almost perfect minute.
We really know what we're doing.
We're doing great. We're doing great.
That's all I'm saying.
So anyway. Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
What a time. What a time.
Shalene, thank you for being here. This has been an amazing second appearance.
Yes.
You're always great. You're always great. You can find us at cantlit.ca, at cantlit on Twitter, at cantlit on Facebook. You can follow Jen and I on Instagram if you want to get the selfies that we are going to take. The super sweaty selfies.
Sweaty selfies.
Super sweaty selfies.
My favorite kind of selfies.
Yeah. Hashtag super sweaty selfies. I'm at Del Botchery on Instagram.
I'm at Jen Lee Fur.
Like a dog's fur.
Like a fur.
Mm-hmm. Shalene, if people want to find you online, where this should they look?
Twitter, I'm at LWE Studio and ShaleneKnight.com.
Wonderful. Easy. And you can, yeah. And through there, you can find Learn Writing Essentials.
Yeah.
You can find Breathing Space Creative. You can find Friends in the Community. You can find it all.
Everything.
You can find Chester's
books.
You can find Chester's pics. Yeah. It's beautiful. So Shalene, we only have one question left for you.
Oh no.
And that question is, what can't you with? I'm trying to think what I said last time, and I think it was something about avocados or something. So I'm going to say rush hour. I can't deal with it. I haven't had to deal with it for a long time, but today I was about to lose it. I did too. There's people everywhere, and I'm already sweaty. Like, worst. I don't want to be on transit 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Yeah, that's... Ever. That's great. Again. I think that's very reasonable, honestly. Yep. Ever. I mean, just more wisdom from Shalene. Don't get on the bus. Don't go outside. And just between 5 and 7. And go to the back of the bus. Like, push back. Go to the back. I had to wait for 3 buses to get on that 95 beeline thing. Oh, that bus is very... Is that normal? Is that how it is? It's not good. Oh, no, we don't like it. I don't like that. It's not good. Everyone's get on it, TransLink. Yeah. Some longer buses. Pull it together. Thank you again, Shalene. Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Thank you. Thank you. I love you both. And I'm so glad you were here today. All right. Listeners, go fuck yourself. Just kidding. I love you. Goodbye.